Section 4, The Rebirth of Reform, An American Story. On a drizzly March morning in 1893, a nursing student named Lillian Wald was teaching a public health class to residents of New York's poor Lower East Side. Suddenly, a girl broke in, disrupting the lesson. The child's mother desperately needed a nurse. The interruption changed Wald's life. She followed the girl to a squalid tenement, where she found a family of seven sharing their two rooms with boarders. The sick woman lay on a dirty bed. Wald later wrote, "That morning's experience was a baptism of fire. Deserted were the laboratory and the academic work of the college. I never returned to them. To my inexperience, it seems certain that conditions such as these were allowed because people did not know, and for me, there was a challenge to know and to tell. If people knew things, and things meant everything implied in the condition of this family, such horrors would cease to exist." Quoted in The House on Henry Street. In 1895, Wald and her friend Mary Brewster established the Henry Street Settlement. The young nurses offered medical care, education, labor organization, and social and cultural programs to the neighborhood residents. Social criticism. The tremendous changes brought about by industrialism and urbanization triggered a debate among Americans as to how best address society's problems. While many Americans embraced the ideas of individualism and social Darwinism, others disagreed, arguing that society's problems could be fixed only if Americans and their government began to take a more active role in regulating the economy and helping those in need. Henry George on Progress and Poverty. In 1879, journalist Henry George published Progress and Poverty. His book quickly became a national bestseller. The present century has been marked by a prodigious increase in wealth-producing power, George observed, which should have made poverty a thing of the past. Instead, he argued, it becomes no easier for the masses of our people to make a living. On the contrary, it becomes harder. The gulf between the employed and the employer is growing wider. Social contrasts are becoming sharper. As liveried carriages appear, so do barefoot children. From Progress and Poverty. Most economists now argue that George's analysis was flawed. Industrialism did make some Americans very wealthy, but it also improved the standard of living for most other Americans as well. At the time, however, in the midst of the poverty, crime, and harsh working conditions, many Americans did not believe things were improving. George offered a simple solution. Land, he argued, was the basis of wealth, and people could grow wealthy just by waiting for land prices to rise. George proposed a single tax on this unearned wealth to replace all other taxes. He believed it would help make society more equal and also provide the government with enough money to help the poor. Economists have since rejected George's economic theory. His real importance to American history is that he raised questions about American society and led the way in challenging the ideas of social Darwinism and laissez-faire economics. Many future reform leaders first became interested in reform because of George's book. Reform Darwinism. 4 years after Henry George challenged the ideas of social Darwinism, Lester Frank Ward published Dynamic Sociology. Ward took the ideas of social Darwinism and used them to reach a very different conclusion than Darwin had. He argued that human beings were different from other animals in nature because they had the ability to think ahead and make plans to produce the future outcomes they desired. Ward's ideas came to be known as Reform Darwinism. People, he insisted, have succeeded in the world not because of their ability to compete, but because of their ability to cooperate. Ward believed that competition was wasteful and time-consuming. Government, he argued, could regulate the economy, cure poverty, and promote education more efficiently than could competition in the marketplace. While some disagreed with Ward's conclusions, others did think that government should do more to solve society's problems. Among these were the people who became reformers in the late 1800s. Looking backward. By the late 1880s, some critics of social Darwinism and laissez-faire economics had moved to the opposite extreme. In 1888, Edward Bellamy published Looking Backward, 2000 to 1887, a novel about a young Bostonian who falls asleep in 1887 and awakens in the year 2000 to find that the United States has become a perfect society with no crime, poverty, or politics. In this fictional society, the government owns all industry and shares the wealth equally with Americans. Bellamy's ideas were essentially a form of socialism. His book quickly became a bestseller, and although few people were willing to go as far as Bellamy suggested, his ideas, like those of George and Ward, helped to shape the thinking of American reformers in the late 1800s. Reading check. Describing. What were Lester Frank Ward's views on government? Naturalism in literature. Criticism of industrial society also appeared in literature in a new style of writing known as naturalism. Social Darwinists and realists argued that people could control their lives and make choices to improve their situation. Naturalists challenged this idea by suggesting that some people failed in life simply because they were caught up in circumstances they could not control. In other words, leaving society and the economy unregulated did not always lead to the best result. Sometimes people's lives were destroyed through no fault of their own. Among the most prominent naturalist writers were Stephen Crane, Frank Norris, Jack London, and Theodore Dreiser. Stephen Crane's novel Maggie, A Girl of the Streets, 1893, told the story of a girl's descent into prostitution and death. Frank Norris's work McTeague, 1899, described how a dentist and his wife are driven mad by greed and violence. Jack London's tales of the Alaskan wilderness demonstrated the power of the natural environment over civilization. Theodore Dreiser's stories, such as Sister Carrie, 1900, painted a world where people sinned without punishment and where the pursuit of wealth and power often destroyed their character. Reading check. Describing. How did the beliefs of naturalist writers differ from those of social Darwinists? Helping the urban poor. While naturalist writers expressed pessimism about the individual's life in an industrialized world, some critics of industrial society were working for reform. Their reform efforts gave rise to the social gospel movement, the Salvation Army, and the YMCA, women's clubs, settlement houses, and temperance movements. The social gospel. From about 1870 until 1920, reformers in the social gospel movement worked to better conditions in cities according to the biblical ideals of charity and justice. An early advocate of the social gospel, Washington Gladden, a minister from Columbus, Ohio, tried to apply what he called Christian law to social problems. During a coal strike in 1884, for example, Gladden preached about the right and necessity of labor organizations, despite the fact that his congregation included top officers of the coal company. Walter Rauschenbusch, a Baptist minister who spent 9 years serving in a church in one of New York's poorest neighborhoods, later led the social gospel movement. As he put it, the church must either condemn the world and seek to change it, or tolerate the world and conform to it. Unlike social Darwinists, Rauschenbusch believed that competition was the cause of many social problems, causing good people to behave badly. The efforts of leaders like Gladden and Rauschenbusch inspired many organized churches to expand their missions. These churches began to take on community functions designed to improve society. Some of their projects included building gyms and providing social programs and daycare. Others focused exclusively on helping the poor. The Salvation Army and the YMCA. The combination of religious faith and interest in reform nourished the growth of the Christian Mission, a social welfare organization first organized in England by a minister named William Booth. Adopting a military-style organization, the group became known as the Salvation Army in 1878. It offered practical aid and religious counseling to the urban poor. Like the Salvation Army, the Young Men's Christian Association, or YMCA, also began in England. The YMCA tried to help industrial workers and the urban poor by organizing Bible studies, prayer meetings, citizenship training, and group activities. In the United States, YMCAs, or Ys, quickly spread from Boston throughout the country. YMCA facilities included libraries, gymnasiums, swimming pools, auditoriums, and low-cost hotel rooms available on a temporary basis to those in need. Revivalism and Dwight L. Moody. One prominent organizer of the American YMCA was Dwight L. Moody, who was president of the Chicago YMCA in the late 1860s. A gifted preacher and organizer, Moody founded his own church in Chicago, today known as Moody Memorial Church. By 1867, Moody had begun to organize revival meetings in other American cities. In 1870, Moody met Ira Sankey, a hymn writer and singer. Together, they introduced the gospel hymn into worship services in the United States and Great Britain. Moody's preaching and Sankey's hymns drew thousands of people to revival meetings in the 1870s and 1880s. Moody strongly supported charities that helped the poor, but he rejected both the social gospel and social Darwinism. He believed the way to help the poor was not by providing them with services, but by redeeming their souls and reforming their character. The Settlement House Movement. In a way, the Settlement House Movement was an offshoot of the Social Gospel Movement. It attracted idealistic reformers who believed it was their Christian duty to improve living conditions for the poor. During the late 1800s, reformers such as Jane Addams established settlement houses in poor neighborhoods. In these establishments, middle-class residents lived and helped poor residents, mostly immigrants. Addams, who opened the famous Hull House in Chicago in 1889, inspired many more such settlements across the country, including the Henry Street Settlement run by Lillian Wald in New York City. The women who ran settlement houses provided everything from medical care, recreation programs, and English classes to hot lunches for factory workers. Their efforts helped shape the social work profession, in which women came to play a major role. Reading check. Summarizing, what were the beliefs of Dwight L. Moody? Public education. As the United States became increasingly industrialized and urbanized, it needed more workers who were trained and educated. The demand for skilled workers led to a much greater focus on building schools and colleges in the late 1800s. The spread of schools. The number of public schools increased quickly after the Civil War. In 1870, around 6,500,000 children attended school. By 1900, that number had risen to over 17,300,000. Public schools were often crucial to the success of immigrant children. It was there that children usually became knowledgeable about American culture, a process known as Americanization. To assimilate immigrants into American culture, schools taught immigrant children English, American history, and the responsibilities of citizenship. They also tried to instill discipline and a strong work ethic, values considered important to the nation's progress. Americanization could also pose a problem for immigrant children, however, because sometimes parents worried that it would make the children forget their own cultural traditions. Not everyone had access to school. In the rush to fund education, cities were way ahead of rural areas. Many African Americans also did not have equal educational opportunities. To combat this discrimination, some African Americans started their own schools. The leader of this movement was Booker T. Washington, who founded the Tuskegee Institute in Alabama in 1881. Education for the workplace. City schools helped immigrants assimilate, and they also helped future workers prepare for the jobs they hoped would lift their families out of poverty. The grammar school system in city schools divided students into 8 grades and drilled them in timely attendance, neatness, and efficiency, necessary habits for success in the workplace. At the same time, vocational and technical education in the high schools provided students with skills required in specific trades. Expanding higher education. Colleges also multiplied in the late 1800s, helped by the Morrill Land Grant Act. This Civil War era law gave federal land grants to states for the purpose of establishing agricultural and mechanical colleges. By 1900, land grant colleges were established across the Midwest. the number of students enrolled expanded rapidly in this period. In 1870, around 50,000 students attended college, but by 1890, the number had more than tripled to 157,000. Traditionally, women's educational opportunities lagged behind men's. Around this time, however, things began to change. The opening of private women's colleges such as Vassar, Wellesley, and Smith, along with new women's colleges on the campuses of Harvard and Columbia universities, served to increase the number of women attending college. Public libraries. Like public schools, free libraries also made education available to city dwellers. One of the strongest supporters of the public library movement was industrialist Andrew Carnegie, who believed access to knowledge was the key to getting ahead in life. Carnegie donated millions of dollars toward the construction of libraries all across the United States. These libraries, as well as the various educational and social reform movements that arose in the late 1800s, helped people cope with the harsher aspects of a newly industrialized society. Reading check. Explaining. How did the United States try to Americanize immigrants? Critical thinking skill builder. Hypothesizing. Why learn this skill? When you are reading new material, you may often encounter ideas and events that you do not immediately understand. One way to overcome this difficulty is to make educated guesses about what happened. Learning the skill. When you read things that you do not understand, you probably make guesses about what the material means. You may or may not have been able to prove these guesses, but you have taken a step toward deciphering the information. This step is called hypothesizing. When you hypothesize, you form one or more hypotheses, which are guesses that offer possible answers to a problem or provide possible explanations for an observation. When hypothesizing, follow these steps. Read the material carefully. Ask yourself what the material is actually saying. To do this, try to put the material in your own words. Determine what you might logically assume from your guesses. Then form one or more hypotheses. Test each hypothesis to determine whether or not it is correct. You can usually do this by asking yourself questions that relate to your hypothesis and then researching the answers. Based on your research, determine which hypothesis, if any, provides an explanation for the information that you originally read. Hypotheses are only preliminary explanations. They must be accepted, rejected, or modified as the problem is investigated. Each hypothesis must be tested against the information gathered. Hypotheses that are supported by evidence can be accepted as explanations of the problem. Practicing the skill. Using the steps just discussed and what you have read in the chapter, test the following hypotheses and determine if they can be supported. 1. Most immigrants who came to the United States came in search of work. 2. Improved transportation led people to move to urban areas from rural areas. 3. The general laissez-faire approach taken by the government toward growing cities was beneficial to businesses and citizens. Applying the skill. Hypothesizing. Reread the passage titled The Resurgence of Nativism in Section 1. Using the facts that you are given in these paragraphs, form at least two hypotheses that may explain what is being described. Test each hypothesis, then select the best one. Which hypothesis did you choose? Why? Glencoe's Skill Builder Interactive Workbook CD-ROM Level 2 provides instruction and practice in key social studies skills.